Today I had the pleasure of speaking to Edwin. He is a third grade teacher in Philadelphia. And one fun fact is that he is a teacher in the district that he went to as a kid. He is a Millersville alumni, and he's looking to network with other RAD educators. I've been following Edwin for a while, and I'm always amazed at his passion and enthusiasm for the teaching profession. So I really hope you enjoy this first podcast of 2020. Start off with, please tell me a little bit about yourself.
So my name is Edwin Thomas Pinguella, and I'm currently a third grade teacher in Philadelphia, and this is my third year teaching. All 3 years have been in third grade, and all 3 years have been at the same school in Philadelphia, so it's amazing how it's my third year already, and I just feel like I just started.
Yeah, it does go by really quick.
Yeah, it does. It goes by pretty quick. I just remember setting up my classroom for the first time. Like, oh, wow, I'm almost done my third year.
Yeah, and you have a different experience because I was at a Catholic school last year and now I'm at a public school. So I was switching schools and hopefully, you know, I eventually find the one where I want to be for my whole career. But it is. At the beginning, in those beginning years, you get lucky if you stay in the same school because of turnover and different changes that happen.
Yeah, so I've been fortunate that I've been at the same school. You know, I really only have had to change my room once in the past 3 years. And, you know, I know most of the families know me, the kids, you know, even though I might not have them, they know me. You know, you kind of make your presence known. But, you know, it would be, you know, sometimes you do need to change the scenery and try to find that perfect school. You know, it's not easy. Yeah. It's not easy, but, you know, because you don't want to work somewhere where you're not happy or you feel like you don't belong.
Yeah, and I know that when I was in college, they always talked about finding that perfect fit. And when you're looking for a job at first, it's really hard to find that because you get so excited to have an interview. And then if you get the offer, you want to take it. But it's also that risk of, if I don't take it, will I have a job? Because you never know. So I know that I was trying to find the right fit and I found a school that I loved, but it is something where you also think about location and you want to be close to, you know, your family or whoever you're living with. And those factors get in the way too.
Yeah. So, like I said, I've been in my same school for the past 3 years, and my first year, I did have to commute. I was living in the suburbs with my parents, so I did have to commute, and it was a pain to do the, like, it was like a 45, sometimes an hour commute, and then sometimes an hour, 45 minutes coming home, depending on traffic. And now, since last year, I've been in my apartment in Philadelphia, which is only really 15 minutes from my school, 20 at most. And it's basically like a straight drive. So it is nice to have a short commute. But yeah, find that perfect fit. It's not always easy at first. And lucky for me, I actually got my job before I graduated college. I went for an interview and I knew one of my friends that I went to college with, she had graduated a little bit before me. And she was working at the school. So she was telling me about it. And I went for an interview. So I think that kind of helped as well. So I was very fortunate to have a job already lined up before college. Because it's not always that case.
Yeah. And I was in the position where all my friends were getting interviews and getting offers. And I was the last one hired out of my core group. So I was always like at graduation, I was like, I'm, you know, stressing about the job search. But then a week later, I ended up getting an offer and everything worked out. But it is that you also feel like you're competing a little bit and you want to find the right fit. But when your friends are getting hired, you're like, okay, so I want to have a job. So it's, well, especially when you're just starting out, you're excited about graduating and you want to get your foot in the door and begin your career.
Yeah. So like with the perfect fit, if it's all right, I'll talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So like for me, I'm originally from New York, and my family, we moved out here when I was about 6. And then we lived in Philadelphia for many years, and I basically went through the school district of Philadelphia. system as a kid. So for me, I know for a fact, and going through like my practicum experiences and stuff like that in college, I knew for me that I wanted to return to Philly because I had some amazing teachers here that were big inspirations. And I just knew because I am from this area and I sort of know, I can kind of relate to my students, that I just knew for me it would be a better reward. Like, no offense to, like, you know, suburb schools, but I've been in some and I just felt like I didn't belong and I just felt uncomfortable. And so for me, you know, I preferred like urban setting public schools over like suburban schools. It's just, that's just my, mm-hmm. that's just my fit for me, because I just feel like for me, I thrive more. Now, is it challenging? Yes. I mean, teaching in general is challenging, but in, you know, urban setting, especially in Philadelphia, it's very challenging, especially where I'm at, because the kids come with a lot, you know?
Yeah.
And they don't teach you how to really handle that in college, you know? So mm-hmm. I always had a different perspective, because when I was in college, I was really the only male in my cohort. And this was early childhood education. And I was really the only male in that cohort, and really the only one who's diverse, because I'm also Puerto Rican and I'm also LGBT person. So I had a lot of different perspectives while I was in college. So, you know, everyone was set on getting suburban jobs, but it's not always easy getting those jobs. You might have to take, you know, a job you might not feel comfortable at first, you know. It's not for everyone. Yeah. It's not for everyone.
mm-hmm. So in education, we all have good and bad days. Please reflect on some good days you have had in education.
Like teaching-wise or just like in general?
It could be teaching and in general.
So I would say most of my good days will come when, I guess it's a cliche, but when the students get it. Like, it's like, oh my God, they finally get, like, you know, like the light bulb goes in their head. It's really, that's what I live for. And the kids actually understanding what's being taught. Because sometimes I feel like, especially when I first start off, I feel like, oh my, I'm such a bad teacher. I can't teach this. I'm just, ah. And then when the kids understand, it's like, okay, maybe I'm not a bad, oh, what happened now? Oh, what happened? Uh-oh.
No, you're good. I can still hear you.
Oh, okay. All right. It's saying trying to reconnect. Okay.
No, you're good.
The good days is just like the aha moments. And then also when students, they come up to you and they just, you know, say, Mr. Minguella, are you okay? Like they feel empathy for you. Because some students can tell when, you know, the teacher's not feeling the best.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love those. Like, I'll get little pictures, like, I'm a big Pokemon fan, and my classes know it, especially this year's class. And I've been, you know, my students will draw me, like, Pokemon pictures. And even I actually got a Pokemon figure from one of my students and Pokemon cards. I was not expecting that. It's just, like, little things like that. And then because they give me a gift, I try to give them thank you notes in return. And just, you know, one of my students, like, I love your thank you note. You know, they appreciate, like, those little things. So I just, like, little things like that is what gets me going. You know.
Yeah, it's all about the students, and I feel like whenever I'm worried about something, I'm like, but I need to be focused on the kids that I teach, and they always find a way to make your day. And you're right that they do know when you're having an off day or if you're not feeling your best. Like, I was sick with the flu and I came to school the next day and they're like, you shouldn't be here. I'm like, I am fine, I feel better, and I wanted to be there on the last day with the kids before break. But they all knew that I wasn't feeling my best. They were really trying to focus and stay on task and make me laugh and, you know, get me through it. But those kids are definitely why we do what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that you're making that difference.
Yeah. And it's like, they do work for me. So like, we have quite a few assessments in Philly, and you know, this is their first year. Third grade is their first year being exposed to like standardized testing and stuff like that. So it's new for them. But I will say, like, this year especially, my class has really tried their best on these assessments. And the scores, you know, while they're not, like, proficient, they have gone up for each time we've been taking these assessments, and that makes me proud. And I share that joy with the kids. I'm like, guys, you know, from the last one to this one, we went up like 10%. You know, and I'll even show it to them, and I'll reward them for that, because I will, like, they do, like, I love when the kids actually do. Like, I will say, I'm a strict teacher. I'm very, like, I have my procedures, routines, and, you know, I'm very, like, strict like that. But I'm also very consistent. The kids know I love them. I will, you know, I will take care of them while they're in the classroom, but I have my expectations. I will say, I love when students do work. Like, I guess, like, this year's crew especially, they really do try to work for me, and I love it. It makes the day go better.
Yeah. So likewise, what are some things you have experienced that were difficult at the time, but looking back now, you learned a lot from them?
So one situation I had was with, like, a student back then. Like, this was my first year teaching. I had a student that was really, it was like the second week of school, and he was really trying to harm himself. And that was something I was like, oh my, like, I didn't know how to deal with it. And looking back now, like, from that situation, is just trying to understand where the kids are coming from, try to talk to them, leave them be if they want to be left alone. You know, I think also I think I was pushing that kid a bit. Like, I was trying to figure out, like, what's going on. I think that made it worse. You know, kind of just kind of read the kids a bit better. Like, I will say I've gotten better at that. Like, if the kid wants to be left alone, just leave them alone. You know? So I think that's something. Because, again, my second week of teaching and then the kid trying to harm themselves, that's something that they definitely don't teach you in college, and I was not prepared for.
Yeah, and I'm teaching at a school right now, too, where the kids come from different home lives, and I'm seeing a lot of students who do have difficult times at home. So I'm always like, if they're having a rough day, they're open with me about it, or they come up to me and they're like, Miss J, I'm having a rough day and I need just letting you know, you know, I'm not having a good day. I need to kind of just sit there and I'll do work, but I'm not going to be super on top of it. And I'm like, okay, like, I appreciate you telling me. And I view, as I was saying, it was just, you know, having the kids come up to you and tell you that they're having a bad day, that goes really far. Because I know that sometimes we have students who are less open about things, but whenever I have a kid that comes up to me, then I know that I built that trust, and they know that I have their back and that we can work a solution. But I have students that in August wouldn't do that, and now they're coming up to me and telling me things like that. So I can see the growth in them, and that always makes me happy when I know that they feel that sense of trust and that they know that I'm there for them no matter what's going on.
Yeah, I feel the same way, because like I said, at first, when I first started teaching, I didn't always read the students well, and I would kind of react to things quickly. And now I've learned better just to kind of, like, before I kind of react, just to see what's going on first with the students, because, again, stuff could be happening. And I always let the kids know, if there's something going on, you can always tell me. If you're not comfortable telling me, that's fine. Just say, look, I'm having a rough day, I need to leave me. That's perfectly fine. Because I tell them, we as teachers, I tell them when I'm not happy. I'm like, look, class, I'm not feeling the best today. I'm just letting you know, because it shows them that we're human, you know.
Yeah. We're human.
Emotions happen, you know. So it's good that we can, like, you know, I think it's good between, you know, that teachers and students can actually, you know, share that with each other. Like, hey, I'm having a bad day. You know, I think that's building relationships with the kids.
Yeah, and I think that's something I do with my students, too, is that if I'm having a rough day, like, they usually can pick up on it. But if I'm open about it, then they let me be, and they're kind of like, okay, you know, I'm trying to make it through today, or I'm not feeling good, or whatever it is. And the kids, because I'm open with them, then they're doing the same back, because they see that I'm giving them something, and then they're like, oh, okay, she's open with us, so that makes me be okay with, like, she knows that we get it. So I love when my kids come up to me, and they know, like, since, again, it's important to be upfront with them, because they eventually figure it out anyway, because they're so smart. So sometimes it's just better to say, hey, you know, you guys can tell, but I'm not having the best day, and we have to work through it. And, you know, I keep my positive attitude, but sometimes that's really hard to do. So the kids are definitely, again, receptive to that. And I love that about her job.
Yeah, that's what I love about, you know, that's one of the things I love about teaching is just building those relationships. And I've gotten a bit better over these past few years. You learn as you go.
Yeah. So what is one piece of advice you would like to give any new teachers?
So one piece of advice I would give is just take it all in. You know, especially those that are starting off at, you know, their first day of school. It's going to be nerve-wracking. It's always nerve-wracking, even for me, you know, the first day of school. But especially the first year teacher, it's very nerve-wracking. I think I had like 7 panic attacks before the school day even started. I was, you know, but just like, you know, relax, take it all in, and know you're going to make mistakes. It's going to happen. And try to not let negativity get to you. You know, if you get feedback from an observation, it's just all negative. Try not to let that get. I mean, sometimes it's hard. It's even hard for me sometimes. But try to think of it as, okay, this is what I can work on. And, you know, that's that. You know, you're going to make mistakes. It happens. Just don't hurt, you know, don't put yourself down doing it. And just be there for the kids. You know, you're there for the kids and just making sure you're teaching the content correctly. Not well, I wouldn't say that either, because my first year you're learning, so I would even say not that, but just take it all in, and, you know, just be there for the kids.
Yeah, and I think that's so important with observations. I know that I always get so nervous, and I feel like whenever anyone comes to my room, I'm always like, you know, you get that fear of an admin coming in, but then once I notice that they're in there, and then I start kind of calming down, especially if it's an admin that I can talk to about things, then I feel more comfortable with. Mm-hmm. But it is. I get worried about the feedback, but I always do view it as a learning experience. And at sometimes I read it and I'm like, okay, like I know that that wasn't something that went well, so I can assume that they're going to write about it. And I read it, and they always give me strategies to make it better next time, or to fix little tweaks that will make it work. So I know that I'm trying new things a lot in my classroom, because I have things that work and some things don't. So I know that I'm trying to fix those things as I go, but I know that I'm making mistakes, and I know that a lot of new teachers worry about that, but I think that's such a part of our profession too, is that we have to evolve and grow. Mm-hmm. And show our students that, hey, we make mistakes too, and sometimes I gotta go back in that classroom and I'm like, that didn't work, or that seating arrangement was not working for me, and we have to fix it. And yep, we work together as a team, and the kids respond to that well, because they see that I'm trying to fix things, and then they realize that they can make mistakes and learn from it as well.
Yeah, especially with seating arrangements. I'm the king of changing seats, because I'm like, uh-uh, this ain't working.
Yeah.
So I'm always changing seats, because, you know, some classes, some years is different than others. Like, some years you can have kids in groups. Some years you're going to have them, like, not in groups, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I will also say, for new teachers, don't be afraid to ask and reach out to, you know, other educators at your school or educators outside. Like, I felt, for me, I've been on Twitter since my college years, and that's has been, I think this is my 5th year on Twitter, and getting, you know, look, you know, following educators and looking at advice, it kind of helped me how I am today. And even if I just want to reach out, because I've had posts where I'm like, oh, I feel terrible as a mm-hmm. teacher, and then people are just reaching out, just the positivity, and people messaging me, trying to give me advice. And it's just, don't be afraid to ask, you know, don't be afraid to ask, and try to, what's the word I'm trying to think of? Try to, you know, oh my God, I'm like, oh, what's the word today? Try to, So, like, you know, always, to me, teaching, you're a lifelong learner. You're always learning. And I try to tell that to the kids. You're learning, I'm learning. So like you might, there might be some professional development books that you might want to read, or go to like conferences. You know, I try to find like free ones like around me, or even like webinars.
Yeah.
Because so, again, some things may not work. So you want to try something else, you know. Don't, if it's not working, don't stick with it. Try to see what can you enhance or change, you know. So again, ask around. There's many, many experts out there who'd be willing to talk. And I've learned that. And it's been helpful for me throughout these years.
Yeah, I've had students, like my students were in groups at the beginning of the year because we're doing a lot of stations and guided math, and it wasn't working for me. And every other teacher in my, like on my floor does groups. And I was like, when you're new, starting out in a new grade, for a new subject, and like I student taught in sixth grade math, but this was a whole different ballpark. And my kids were talking, and like, I realized that I didn't go over expectations for groups as well as I should have. So then I had to revamp it. I did a U-shape. And I liked it, but I feel like now my kids who are not understanding math very well because they have gaps, and I'm trying to work with them as much as I can. But when they're sitting and they're struggling, they don't have anyone to ask because the person next to them might not be willing to help. Or like I try to build the culture in my classroom that they're not afraid to ask for help. Mm-hmm. But sometimes some kids are shy and they don't want to ask, or they're not in a group atmosphere, so they feel like they can't reach out, so then they're all raising their hand, and I'm one person, so it's hard for me to be everywhere at once. So I'm doing groups again, but I'm going to be clear about my expectations this time and seeing if that helps, because I want them to be able to work together and collaborate, and sometimes that makes my students feel more confident because they can ask others for help and work through it if I'm not available at their table. But it is something that it's a learning experience, and I know that I have groups of kids like last year that were fine in groups, but then this year I'm struggling with it and I'm trying to fix things. And it is, I definitely grew a lot from Twitter. I also reach out when I'm having rough days. And I know there's a lot of educators out there that are super helpful and available. And that's been great, especially as a newer teacher. I think Twitter has definitely been a lifeline and like a place for me to get that support when I need it.
I think new teachers nowadays, and even veteran ones now, it's very beneficial to have Twitter, I think. I actually prefer Twitter over other social medias, because I feel like it can be a little bit more personal with people. You know, you can reach out. Now, with the seating arrangement with classroom management, I would say another piece of advice is, like, let's say you're using, like, Class Dojo. It's not working for the first week. Don't give it up yet. You want to try at least a few weeks, and then, because if you keep trying to change up your classroom management or behavior management system, it's gonna just become more chaos in the room. You know, give it a few weeks before you change it. Like even if you do like behavior one-on-one with students, so like maybe this kid might need to try a sticker chart, don't give up after the first week. You know, try a few weeks, and if it's not working, then try to reamp, you know, the system. And again, ask for help. There's many experts out there, even just, you know, Google, Pinterest, you know. Like, for me, one of the things I've kind of nipped in the butt is pencils. I don't know about you, but I don't like kids sharpening pencils.
Mm-hmm.
They sharpen pencils, they think it's like a party. And I'm like, I don't know why you're there for 5 minutes. It takes like 30 seconds to sharpen a pencil. So my first year, I couldn't think of a system like for pencils. You know, if a kid wanted a pencil, I had a sign out sheet. They had to give me something in return. They had to get it back if they give me the pencil back. And that was just too much. So I looked online and I did this thing called like the pencil challenge or the pencil wars, where I gave each kid's a pouch, and I put a certain amount of pencils, six pencils. I've been doing this year's class, I've given them 10 pencils. But this pass is six pencils. Trust the student, do it like during lunchtime. And if the kid has all their pencils, I do raffle tickets in my room. So they'll get like a raffle ticket or two. And so far, that has been my best system that I have been doing all my years of teaching, you know. And again, I didn't start off doing that, but when I was trying to find out help for, you know, pencils, this was the system that I thought would work, and it's been working for me ever since. So always ask for help if you feel like you're struggling with like a routine, a procedure, classroom management system, anything like that.
Yeah, and I think it's also important with that, like whenever I'm dealing with a procedure and I look up ideas on Pinterest and I'm trying different things, but I also know that my first year, I wanted to try like a technique or something that I tried for a few weeks, but then I realized that wasn't my style, so then I had to switch it. And my kids, like, I'm open with it. I'm like, okay, tried this, not working the way I wanted to, let's try this. And then eventually I kind of figured out what works for me, but there's so much out there, and I think everything's so, like, I think a lot of it is valuable to get ideas, but I think it's important to also find your own style, because sometimes I try things that other teachers really like, and then they're not working for me. So it's always something that you have to, I take it with a grain of salt. Like, there's amazing things out there, and I'm big on looking up ideas, and I try things in my classroom. Mm-hmm. But then, depending on the class and the kids you have, some things don't work out perfectly. And then, you know, you could always adjust it and make it work for you. And I think that's a great approach, because I saw the pencil thing and I wanted to do it, but middle school, it'd be, you know, when I have 25 students and they rotate every 90 minutes, it'd be hard to go get those resources out there and have them be held accountable. So I'm always trying to figure out an approach that would work for me, because I do have that problem too with the pencils, but I just give them one and then I end up running out, so it's not working. So I have to figure out, you know, I was kind of feeling it out too, but when it becomes an issue, then I'm like, okay, now there's, you know, this procedure that I'm going to put in place, because I can't be buying pencils every week. Yeah, you know?
It's. I mean, you shouldn't be buying pencils every week, but we end up doing it. For mm-hmm. me, I like it. For me, the kids, they know if they can't come up to get new pencils for me. I have a drawer that says sharp and dull, so I always have sharp pencils ready. The kids know, like, if it's before Friday, they can't come up for me for a new pencil if one's broken. I'm like, you have five other pencils in your pencil pouch. They come up to me if all six are broken. Now, in order for them to get new pencils, they need to trade in the pencils that they have. So maybe that's something, like, it. And, like, is that what you do? Like, do you have them trade pencils? Like, if they're asking for a new one, do they give you their broken one?
You know, on my kids, because they rotate classes, mm-hmm. they have a tendency of losing their pencils. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where I talk to them, I'm like, how do you lose a pencil? And they're like, well, you know, it's in my locker, or it's in the other classroom, or I left it in lunch, or whatever it is. So for me, because I want them to do their work, sometimes if they honestly have nothing else, I ask, like, I'm like, okay, borrow one from a friend next to you, or, you know, problem solved. But then if they really can't find one, then I'm very, like, I have a box of 100 sharpened pencils, and I'm like, okay. Because I don't want to fight that battle, because I need them to do their work. So it's like, for me, whenever I'm at that end, I'm like, you know, they know that I'll say yes. So it's always hard for me to be like, you know, do I want them to do their work? Of course I do. But I want them to be responsible and have that pencil.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm trying to figure out a way, like, either they exchange something, or, you know, to figure out a way to revamp that. Because I obviously want them to be held responsible and accountable, but I want them to work at the same time. So yeah.
That's tough with three rotations. It's easy for me with my, since I'm self-contained.
Yeah.
It's a less headache for me. You know, I don't get those, Mr. Miguel, can I go get a pencil? Can I get a pencil? Or they just get up and go sharpen. Mm-mm, nope. Mm-mm. No one touches the sharpener but me.
Yeah.
And it's funny what you said about, you know, finding a system that works for you. So, like, for me, I'm really not big on clip charts. But last year, and I had a rough crew last year, I tried everything else that I could think of. And I was like, oh, I guess I got to try. Let me try clip chart. And I don't. And again, I'm not a big fan of it. But it worked for that crew last year for a bit. Out of everything that I did last year, that was probably the thing that worked for them the most. So you always got, you know, it depends on the class that you have. This year, I'm not using a clip chart. I was like, I'm not trying to use a clip chart again, you know? And so far I usually just do my raffle tickets. Raffle tickets weren't enough for my kids last year. This year it's enough for my kids. And I do also kind of use as well. And we also have this PBIS rewards school system where I'll just give kids points. They can't take away points, but you just give kids points and they have like a badge and just scan their badge and they get a certain amount of points and then they get to go to the school store and they can spend those points on stuff. So it just it varies from year to year. 1 year might work this way, 1 year may work. And you just gotta be flexible with it, you know. That's another advice I would give. Just be flexible. Because there's going to be the fire drills, assemblies, kids getting caught going home early. Just there's going to be interruptions. You just got to learn how to you know, continue the show when that interruption is done.
Yeah. I know that I was trying to figure out that system last year and I used Class Dojo and I loved it. Like, my kids were responding to it really well and they, you know, liked getting the points. When I projected it on the board or whatever I was doing, if I told them, like, they got points, because I taught fourth grade last year, it was a different age group, and they bought into it. I tried a classroom at Konami system, and that ended within a week, because it was too much for me to handle and, like, pass out the paper and pass out the money and try to figure out, like, the management of that was not, like, I wanted to do it, but it wasn't working for my kids, so then I decided to not go with it, because, if you know, you have to think those things ahead, too. Like, I was trying to do something different, and if I had maybe put more work behind it, like, I thought about it, you know, a lot, and I wanted to incorporate it, but it just wasn't working with my students. They weren't buying into it. So I tried Class Dojo. I used that all year, and they really did like it. But with middle school, Class Dojo isn't going to work. So I was trying to do Class Craft, and I never got into it. I played around with it, but my kids like gamification, and they I feel like that would motivate them. Mm-hmm. So I might try it out, because they all have Chromebooks, and I feel like giving them that accountability of them getting points as a team, that might work. So that's something that I can try with at least one of my classes and see how they like it. Mm-hmm. Because I do want to find something. I'm into gamification. I like doing that stuff and incorporating it, but I also want them to be aware of how many points they have. And I think my kids might like it because they're so into video games and that kind of thing works for them. So I'm going to try it out and see what happens. But I know there's, like, not a lot for middle school. I feel like for elementary, Class Dojo worked really well. Mm-hmm. But right now I'm, like, wanting to find a system similar. And I think Classcraft is the best option I have at the moment. So I'm going to try it out. But it's something where I communicate with parents and remind, which I like. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't have that behavior component. And I want the kids to be, you know, raffle tickets I'm using too. But I want something digital because I feel like it's easier for me to maintain.
Yeah.
When I'm in the back of my small group, or I can just kind of reward points really quickly. So I feel like that might work. I don't know. I'm always trying different things.
Yeah, that's what you can do. Just try to see what works. But like I said, I think, you know, try something for a few weeks and then move on if it's not working. Because sometimes it's too much change for the students. I feel like it just throws them off as well.
Yeah. So how can people get in contact with you?
People can get in contact with me on Twitter. Trying to think what my username at the top of my head. Hold on one second. That's probably the best way to get in contact with me. I mean, I do have an Instagram account as well. I use it as personal and professional. I don't feel like having like two different accounts. It's too much work for me. I got enough work on my hands. My username for Twitter is at Mr. Minguela 3. So at Mr. Minguela 3. My last name is spelled MINGUELA. I'm always looking to follow people, and, you know, people sometimes ask me for advice, and I'm like, oh, I'm a third year teacher. I don't know. Give you some advice. So, and I'm always looking to learn from other educators as well. Because I've learned some things from teachers who are first years. I'm like, oh, well, I'm a third year teacher, but I learned something from you and you're a first year teacher. So I would say Twitter's probably the best way to get in contact with me.
Perfect. So thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, no problem. I enjoyed it. I love talking about, like, education in general, but, like, especially, like, the first few years, since I'm technically still in that range of first few years of teaching.
Yeah, so it's all fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you. Enjoy your evening.
Thank you. You too. Have a good evening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.